Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
May 15th seems to be the targeting date. If you're a retail store owner, you can reopen May 15th if you adhere to social distancing requirements. Jamie Goldberg of the Oregonian's got the story on OregonLive.com. I encourage you to check it out. From the Oregonian, Nick Daschle joining us. He covers Oregon State, does a hell of a job with it, joins us all the time. I've enjoyed having listeners tell me how much they enjoy listening to Daschle on the show. Daschle, what do you miss about, 6 weeks ago? What do you miss pre-coronavirus?
You know, I never thought I'd miss standing there watching practice, but I kind of do right now. I mean, that can get to be drudgery, but I imagine the first week or two back, I'll kind of think, yeah, this is not too bad, and then it'll probably hit me again.
That's human nature, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, right. But yeah, I guess I kind of miss it. I still don't miss the drives to Corvallis, but I suppose that'll kick in at some point too. I just like to get out and do something, report or anything other than, you know, just kind of sit here in my office and call people. And that gets kind of stale after a while.
I see the governor comes out yesterday, and we've talked about it a lot on the Today Show, and I think, you know, there's some wiggle room in her statement. And you and I think off air talked about the fact that she kind of said this is a advise, you know, that the Oregon Health Authority advises people and gives sort of a target of the end of September. How did you read the governor's statement yesterday when it comes to sports?
Well, yeah, that's exactly how I'd read it. I mean, we're 4 months out from the end of September. We don't really know what's going to happen between now and the end of September, but I think it's wise to, you know, at least caution people that, you know, it's probably not going to be a good idea to gather in big groups and, you know, not get people's hopes up. But some stuff could change. I don't honestly foresee it changing to the point where fans are actually going to be in stadiums by any time in September, but I suppose it's possible if they're, you know, if they can come up with some sort of a treatment or, you know, things like I see in Vegas where they're using thermal sensors to, you know, detect people that have temperatures, things like that. I don't know what it's going to take to get people in the stadium, but that's how I see it. I mean, I don't think she's saying no way. Know how are you ever going to have fans in the stadium by the end of September? I just think she's saying, don't get your hopes up.
I think a lot of people are looking for some definitive guidance, and I'm not surprised that nationally that became a headline, that Oregon is saying no games, nobody in the stadiums. Nick Daschle of the Oregonian is with us. The Oregon State, Scott Barnes came out. He's been talking a little bit publicly. What's he saying?
Well, I mean, I think he's trying to keep, you know, the fan base somewhat upbeat. He's positive there's going to be a football season, and I can't disagree with him there. I think there will be at some point. I just don't know when it's going to be, but he's adamant. They are going to play football, and it's going to happen. But he won't, you know, obviously doesn't know when. It's just going to happen. And their lives are kind of dependent upon it at Oregon State and pretty much everywhere else in FBS. No football equals, you know, Armageddon. And then the other two from yesterday that he talked about were kind of interesting. Was there in no way is he ever planning on cutting a sport, and that one I'd be a little hesitant to say that because you just don't know how much money you're going to be losing, you know, given all the things that could happen in the next year. But there's a lot. It's tricky to cut a sport. So I could, you know, I could see that. But, you know, that's one I don't know how you could just push that completely off the table. But he's adamant. They're not going to cut any sport. And the other one that was kind of interesting was, you know, there's been this talk that, you know, perhaps some of these leagues could go rogue, conferences could go rogue, like the SEC is going to play, you know, regardless of what everybody else does, or the Big Ten or whatever. He's saying that's not going to happen. You know, we're going to have a national consensus, and he's not worried about the fact that other leagues might play or, you know, play or not play. He says that they're all either going to play or they're not going to play. You know, that's his belief anyway.
Yeah, I want to believe that. I don't trust the SEC. Why don't I trust the SEC?
No, I wouldn't either. I mean, I'm not going to go as far as saying, you know, football trumps lives down there, but, you know, they're a little more dependent on football than we are out here. So no, I mean, they're going to move a lot of mountains to make football happen. And I mean, in the fall happen, not just next spring.
What about ticket holders at Oregon State? You know, I've got tickets at both Oregon and Oregon State, and I haven't heard a lot from either one of those entities about contingency plans. Maybe they just don't want to go there yet.
Well, I asked about that today because I forgot about it yesterday. And the answer I got back, season tickets deadline remains May 15th. That doesn't mean it can't change in the next week, but right now it's still standing at May 15th. I asked about refunds if there's no fans and fans aren't able to go, and that the answer was to be determined. As well as anybody that is, you know, making a donation to get a season ticket, some of those season tickets require a donation. And, you know, if there's no games that fans can go to, is that donation pushed off to another season or whatnot? That's also to be determined. Now, that's something I think they need to have an answer to sooner than later, because, I mean, if I'm a fan right now and I'm thinking about buying an Oregon State season ticket, you know, I want to know, am I going to get a refund if they're not playing, if we don't get to go in the stands or not? I'd want to know that. Or is it going to be a credit or how's that going to work? So I think that's an answer they need to come up with sooner than later.
Nick Daschle of the Oregonian is with me. Just to talk a little college football, Oregon State's got a quarterback who started the Civil War coming back. They've got the head coach. They've got the play caller back. Is it a stretch to say that they're in better shape than some others in the conference when it comes to hitting the ground running, if, in fact, this is like jumping off a moving vehicle and trying to keep your feet?
Sure. I mean, Tristan Jebbia has been throwing to most of these receivers for the last, you know, year and a half. Even though he hasn't played in a lot of games, he's still been throwing in practice to these guys. And so, you know, he has that part down. There's some programs in the Pac-12 that are going to be dependent upon a grad transfer, a transfer quarterback, a guy that hasn't been in the program very long. And yeah, at least Oregon State has that. So I'm not saying they're as far along as an Arizona State or a USC that has a returning starting quarterback, but they do have a little bit of an advantage there that the guy is, you know, he's in sync to some degree with most of his receivers.
Receiving wise, you know, we're talking about Champ Flemings, and you and I have talked about this before. If they can get guys back that were not healthy, you know, last season towards the end of the year, they'll be in a decent shape there. How about at the running back position? Do they have depth? I see with Artavis Pierce going to the Bears, trying to make a roster there. You got Hodgins gone to the NFL at wide receiver. Offensively, where are the playmakers?
Well, B.J. Baylor was really on the edge of becoming somebody that was going to play a lot last year. They just, you know, Pierce had a lot of, he was a veteran, he was a senior, and he'd proved that he could play. And so there just wasn't room for a third running back a lot of times. But when Baylor was given a chance, he performed. He showed up big in the Cal game where they needed him to, you know, they needed him to play well, and he did. And that was a game they won. I think he's going to be an excellent backup to Jamar Jefferson, and you need to have a backup down there because Jefferson, he was fairly durable as a freshman, but last year he had a lot of injuries. So you at least have to wonder. You need to see a full season out of Jamar before you can go, okay, he's not injury prone. So you'd like to have that guy. And then there's Calvin Tyler. He's shown some flashes down there, and they've got a few other. Two guys haven't proven anything yet, but I think they're pretty good 1-2 down there. The one thing I was going to say, you mentioned receivers. The thing that's different there is this year they're going to have a lot. They're going to have more speed than they've had in the past because Josiah Irish didn't play a lot last year, and Anthony Gould didn't play a lot. Those are their two fastest guys on offense, and if they can get those guys incorporated, the offense looks a little bit different than it did a year ago, just because of the speed element.
Easton Mascarenhas, a four-star linebacker, a couple of days ago, committed to Oregon State. I like that this was a defensive player. Where does he fit? Is Oregon State excited about this guy, even though they can't talk about him?
Oh, sure. I mean, just from a buzz standpoint. I mean, it's not often they get a guy with his recruiting credentials now. I mean, you don't have any idea whether he fits in or not. We'll see. And that's a position where, they can work him in as opposed to needing him to play right away, because they do have some young, pretty solid depth at the inside linebacker position. But, yeah, I mean, that was a big win for him, because, I mean, right now you're just starving for anything positive on the college football front, and that gave him a boost for a couple of weeks their fans could talk about. And I mean, that's really all we can say at this point, because we don't really know. He's got credentials and that's about it, but it's somebody that Oregon State hasn't had in a while, of that ilk, four-star, stud on defense.
Highest rated high school defensive pledge in program history. He's the number 11 inside linebacker nationally, and it's good to see them getting help on the defensive side of the ball. And again, nothing's done until it's done, but it's something to talk about. We've talked about the football games. We've talked about the quarterback position. How about the offensive line at Oregon State? They've lost some guys to the NFL, but how much depth did they have a year ago? Can they get better there this coming year?
Well, that's going to be a concern going in. But I honestly think they're okay to pretty good on the offensive line, depending on injuries, and that's just not something you can account for. I know Jonathan, believes that you need to have eight solid guys on the offensive line, because you're going to need a few swing guys, and you're probably going to have to account for an injury or two along the way. So if you can go into a season with eight solid guys, You're in pretty good shape. And I think they're pretty good along as guys that are projected to be starters. That's whether some of those younger linemen that they have in the program develop over the course of the year. And again, this coronavirus thing, has really thrown a monkey wrench into that, because, guys aren't on campus working out. They're at 24-hour fitness, or they're not even at 24-hour
fitness. Not even there.
They're in their garage throwing tires around, or... Right. I saw somebody the other day was lifting grease buckets of grease. So it's hard to say how these guys are going to develop. So, but I think their starting five is going to be solid. It might be a skosh below what they had a year ago because of the experience factor. But I think they'll be okay there, as long as they're not hit with a bunch of injuries.
Nick Daschle, I wish you the best. Thank you for making time for us.
All right, Gonzalo. We'll see you.
Take care. There he is. I like to bring him on about once a week. I don't know if you've noticed that. I bring him on about once a week because I want to know what's going on. And there, the nugget of information he had was about season tickets. And Oregon State sort of, they're like a lot of people here. They're trying to make this up as they go. And I think we're going to have to get comfortable with that. I think that's part of the era we're in right now. I think if you talk to people at different eras of American history, whether there was something going on or nothing going on, I think people found challenges in their era that they had to deal with. you adjust. We adjust. We call an audible. We evolve. I think Oregon State and a lot of others are trying to figure out what is going to go on and how different things will be. All right, Punch It Audio. It's the best sound from all around, and it's next. What have we learned on today's show? We've learned, as I said, I thought yesterday we had a crappy show. Rallied nicely today. Much better show today. I feel better about it. It's mid-show, though. Give us time. I'm just keeping it real. Like, look, we do 15 hours of radio a week, and I expect that it is all going to be great. I do. And I feel like there are a lot of days I leave the show and I'm like, damn, that was really good. I said not too long ago that we had what I thought was a perfect show. I called it like a two-hit shutout, if we're pitching, to use a metaphor. But yesterday on the show, it was one of those days where I was on the mound. I gave up 3 runs in the first inning. I battled back in the second and third inning. By about the 5th inning, I had thrown 130 pitches, and I left the show yesterday going, damn, I didn't really get to talk about the things I wanted to talk about. And when I was talking about them, I didn't feel like I was sharp, and I had great interviews. Like, the interviews were the best part of the show. Myers Leonard on yesterday's show, Bill Monroe of the Oregonian talking about fishing on yesterday's show was great. And I said to my wife, I said, hey, that show sucked. And she said, oh, you're so hard on yourself. But it's true. Sometimes you just have a show or a day at work and you're like, damn it, wasn't good. It wasn't for lack of trying. It was busting my butt, but just didn't come through. And today, I literally, on the last commercial break, because we are mid-show, as that commercial break hits, I said, all right, halfway through, good show today. Coming up, we've got Nick Aliotti, the former Oregon defensive coordinator. He'll be great. Punch It Audio is the best sound from all around. We got some good stuff.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio,
presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
I mean, for crying out loud, if I tell you that every show is perfect, is that true? Can't be. You won't trust me. When I suck, I have to say I suck. I mean, that's accountability. Sal Palantonio on the Dan Patrick Show. He's talking about the NFL schedule released yesterday. The Patriots have 5 primetime games. Why is that? Punch it.
2 words. Bob Kraft cutaway shot in the Super Box. I mean, come on, Dan. Come on. That's what it's all about. Bill Bell. Listen. Here's what we want to know about the NFL in 2020. Can Tom Brady win without Bill Belichick? Can Bill Belichick win without Tom Brady? That's it. Period. Paragraph. End of story. That's what I'm looking for. To me, the greatest Super Bowl ever will be Belichick versus Brady at the Little Sombrero in Tampa. To me, that's the greatest possible matchup. And I'd like to see both of them succeed independent of one another. I think it's a great, great story. I really do.
I had our research team look at the social media followings of NFL teams. Probably won't surprise you that the New England Patriots are second among all teams on social media following, 15.4 million. They have the most Twitter followers. They have the most Instagram followers by far. They're second in Facebook page likes. But the Patriots are as close as we can get to America's team. And oh, by the way, the Dallas Cowboys are number one as America's team. Dallas Cowboys at 8.5 million Facebook page likes lead all NFL teams. The Patriots got 5 primetime games on the NFL schedule because people care about the Patriots. Bottom line, the NFL is shoveling coal here. Feed the furnace. People want to see the Patriots. People want to see the Cowboys. People want to see the Steelers. They want to see the Packers. They even want to see the Seahawks. the Eagles, the Broncos, the Niners, the New York Giants. After that, it kind of drops off. There's like nine, you know, after that, it's Carolina, it's New Orleans, it's Chicago. Maybe there's some interest, newfound interest in the Las Vegas Raiders. But it's the Dallas Cowboys and the Patriots and the Steelers. What? Bang, bang, bang. Frank Caliendo unveiling the schedules. You know he does impersonations. Here's Frank impersonating NFL coaches reading their schedule. Punch it.
Win, 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 win.
I don't give a rat's f- who we're playing. Doesn't matter when, where, place. Just bring them to us. We go to them. Do whatever f- we got to do to just knock their f- blocks out.
You guys want me to memorize the schedule for all 32 teams. Done.
I've been thinking about it a lot in the shower. I have been.
Win, win, bye, win.
Caliendo, not that different than I think a lot of fans. I could hear the fans yesterday as they were unveiling sort of the schedule. Every fan in America picking their team to win somewhere between 9 and 12 games. Nobody going, eh, we're a four-win team. Dana White talking about the UFC event this weekend. He thinks it's going to be great. Punch it.
Listen, as a promoter, you can never guarantee that a fight is going to be, you know, an incredible fight or the best fight you've ever seen. I guarantee you the main event is going to be insane. This fight is going to be one of the best fights of the year. Very tough fight to call. Who's going to win? You cannot miss this main event. And the entire card is stacked from the first fight of the night to the main event. It should be an amazing night of fights.
Dana White wants you to watch UFC 249. It's been this long, winding road. The event has been moved from an island to Brooklyn to Lemoore, California to Jacksonville, but fight night is coming up. He's finally getting this thing. They're doing the weigh-ins. He's excited about it, but you know, if you're interested in seeing Tony Ferguson fight, that's the main event. And it marks the first of three events in 8 days that the UFC will be doing. That's big time. Myers Leonard on yesterday's show, former Blazer, talking about how difficult it is for NBA players. They're real people too, said Myers. Punch it.
People can't always imagine what the NBA lifestyle is like, John. We talked about it plenty of times. I was depressed. I had anxiety at our home arena because I was booed by our own fans. Okay, I was called out by many people in the city of Portland. And that's going to continue to happen. I'm not calling out Portland. I am thankful for every experience I had there because it built me into who I am today. However, that hurt bad. It brought me to my knees. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. But at the same time, I've now learned through that experience. And by the way, I had the willingness to speak on it. And so many people have reached out to me and said, Myers, you have no idea. Thank you so much for being relatable and saying, you know what? Just because I'm an NBA player with millions of dollars and an amazing wife and playing NBA doesn't mean that I don't go through real shit.
He goes through some stuff. Myers Leonard found some new confidence in Miami. The Earl Thomas story, it's embarrassing. I'm not even sure it's a story, but I want to talk about it because Jim Rome did. Earl Thomas and his response to the TMZ story, Jim Rome said it was embarrassing. First, let's give you Earl Thomas. Here's what Earl said about the altercation with his wife. Punch it.
So my agent just hit me and said that I'm going to be on TMZ tomorrow from an altercation that happened with me and Nina. So just wanted to get ahead of it. And I mean, it's really not anybody's business. It's pissing me off that it got out, but it's the world we live in today. But instead of talking about this, just keep us in y'all prayers. And stuff like this happens, bro. You know, we try to live the best lives we possibly can, but sometimes it don't go as planned. Just pray for us, you know, as we go through this stuff. You know, we're back talking. You know, I'm seeing my kids. So just keep us in your prayers.
Earl Thomas making a plea. Jim Rome punch it.
Earl Thomas is a great player. We don't know any of these guys. I've said that a million times because that story is wild. Are you here to tell me that back in the day, this would not have been a thing? I'm going to call bullcrap on that, E. Him getting out in front of it was getting in front of that fire with a gas can. That's not exactly getting out in front of it. Quote, stuff like this happens, bro. No, it doesn't, bro. Only to you.
Jim Rome. I don't totally agree with Jim Rome, because how this went down, I'm certain, is that Earl Thomas's agent said to Earl Thomas, you need to issue a statement. What Earl Thomas needed probably was more guidance, maybe to be a little more heartfelt. Maybe part of this should have been some contrition. Like, I didn't hear Earl Thomas at any point there going, hey, I should have been a better husband. I didn't hear that. But again, I come back to it. It's an embarrassing situation to start with. I don't think he helped anything by getting out in front of it. But I also feel kind of like Jim Rome, like, you know, is it that salacious? I mean, is it that unthinkable that an NFL player would be holed up at an Airbnb and his wife wouldn't be happy about it? I think the part of it that is sad to me is that I didn't hear Earl Thomas talking about maybe what he could have done better. Ian Rappaport on the NFL Network talking about NFL teams taking lots of preventative measures as they try to reopen practice facilities. Punch it.
Roger Goodell recently sent out a memo to all team presidents and high-level executives just informing them the different protocols that needed to be in place by May 15th. So coming up, in order to reopen the facilities. Not saying the facilities are definitely going to be open at that time, but that is when the teams need to have a plan for how to go about it, including some safety regulations, how many people, no more than 50. Would they need to be checked, obviously?
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald
Face. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.